Therefore, the avodah of Elul is to do tshuva out of fear of Hashem. When I say fear, I don't mean, you know, scared because God's going to hit you, but kind of a sense of reverence, awe, and deep respect. Nisan is also a Rosh Hashanah.
Sorry, you said Rosh Hashanah,
Rosh Hashanah Tishrei is din, ne'avodah is... Yiras Hashem. Because the appropriate emotional response to Hashem's midah of din is yira. Nisan is also a Rosh Hashanah, but Nisan is a Rosh Hashanah which expresses God's love for the Jewish people. And therefore, Nisan is a Rosh Hashanah which is based on Midas HaRachamim. The emotional response to Hashem's Midas HaRachamim is Avas Hashem. And therefore, if the Avoda of Elul is Tshuva out of Yiras Hashem, in order to try to exist under Hashem's Midas Adin, the Avodah of Rosh Chodesh Adar is tshuva out of love of Hashem. In that way we can experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas HaRachamim. Right? Rachamim on Hashem's part awakens love on our part. Din on Hashem's part awakens Yira on our part. Right? So the Zman of Adar is an Elul of sorts, but it's a Zman in which the Avodah is tshuva out of love. And since love can generally be experienced only when there is joy, that is why Mishenichnas Ador Marbin Besimcha. We're Marbin Besimcha because we experience the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu during this time. That is why, by the way, Pesach is connected to love. That is why Shir HaShirim is the Megillah that is read during Pesach. Shir HaShirim is the love story between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And that is what Pesach is all about. Pesach is that love story. In fact, it's very, very interesting. You know, Shir HaShirim is written in the form of a romance, etc. And those who don't believe in the divine origin of the Tanakh ascribe it to, in fact, doesn't even mention Hashem. That much. Yesterday was mentioned at all, and Shir HaShirim mentions it very, very little. But there are people who say Shir HaShirim is just not oriental love poetry. And yet Rabbi Akiva taught us, if all the songs are kadosh, if all the songs in the Bible are holy, Shir HaShirim is kodesh kadoshim. Because Shir HaShirim is expressing the passion and love that Hashem has for the Jewish people. The princess is Klal Yisrael, and the Raya, the shepherd, is HaKadosh Baruch. Now, if you ever looked at the art scroll Shir HaShirim, you will even notice that they do not translate it in a literal way. So when it says the princess is passionately waiting for the prince, the art scroll translation would say, when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, we should have been in Mitzrayim 400 years, but God took us out 190 years early because he couldn't wait. Now that kind of robs it of a little bit of its romantic force. They de-romanticize it, and they even indicate in the introduction that the reason they do so is to ensure that people understand it's an allegory, it's a parable, it's a mashal. And the literal truth would give people the wrong idea of what the book is about. So says the Art Scroll Editorial Board. So my question on the Art Scroll Editorial Board is the following. If describing Shir HaShirim as a love song is so likely to be misunderstood, then why did Shlomo HaMelech write it this way? Why didn't he write it in Hebrew the way the Art Scroll translates it in English? Why doesn't it say, when Hashem took us out of the Mitzrayim, you know, it should have been 400 years, etc. Why was it written, Bedafka, in a way which is so prone to being misunderstood and distorted? So there is a thought from Rav Gifter, who says the following. Shir HaShirim is indeed not intended to be literal. Shir HaShirim is a metaphor. It's an allegory. It is a symbolism for a higher, deeper truth. But that higher, deeper truth cannot be understood until one has grasped the literal meaning of the mashal. What do we mean? Shir HaShirim talks about loving God. Shir HaShirim talks about rapture with the divine. But what does it mean to love God? How do we love God? We don't see God. We don't necessarily always feel that close connection with Hashem. So Shlomo HaMelech is teaching you through the medium of the romantic bonds between man and woman that the way one comes to love God is by learning to love another human being with passion and with depth and with commitment. Because if one were to say, I'll skip that level and I'll just go to love of God, by definition that would be an illusion. You can't love Hashem if you don't love Hashem's children. And of course, all human beings are Hashem's children. The Jewish people are called God's firstborn child, kind of the favorite child, as it were. But all human beings are considered to be bonim. In other words, it's a very deep thought here, because the thought basically is, you can't get to the abstract till you get to the concrete. It's kind of the opposite. They tell a story about Leo Tolstoy, the famous author of War and Peace, that he had... he was a social reformer. He wrote a number of books against smoking, even, and against serfdom, the abolition of serfdom in Russia. So he was a count. He was a member of the old pre-revolutionary aristocracy in Russia, Count Tolstoy. And Count Tolstoy was once asked, if he's such an agitator for the rights of man, why does he mistreat his own serfs? He mistreats his slaves. So he said, just because I'm a lover of humanity doesn't mean I have to stand the people I work with every day. Meaning, he loved the abstraction, but it did not translate into the one-to-one. Judaism proceeds on the opposite assumption. The abstraction is worthless unless it is rooted into that one-to-one. And that is why Shlomo HaMelech did not follow the Art School Editorial Board, because although they are undoubtedly correct that Shir HaShirim is a parable for a higher truth, Shlomo says, you don't get to the higher level when you get to those other levels first. And once again, therefore, it shows us that Avas Hashem starts off with our ability to have Avas Yisrael, and in particular the relationship of husband and wife, which is a people relationship, but even beyond that, there is the Avas Yisrael generally that allows one to come to Avas Hashem. Because you can't love your parents if you don't love the child. It's very, very simple. You cannot hate the children of somebody that you truly love.
But we
tend to understand the relationship
of loving God until we're married
and
have, you know, that's a love of
spouse.
But we become kind and loving God
and we kind of have to not. Well, yes. I mean, the answer to that is that in Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. See, this is the funny thing. On one hand, these are mitzvahs in the Torah. That means as soon as a girl becomes 12, as soon as a boy becomes 13, the Torah requires that every single minute of our day, these are the mitzvahs that always apply, we have Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. So on one level, Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem are considered to be simple enough that we can require any pre-adolescent, this is again the girl, it is a pre-adolescent, to do this mitzvah with full intensity. And yet we also know Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem are the lifelong struggles of the greatest souls that Judaism has ever produced. The answer basically is that Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is not a finite thing, like, you know, making a bracha. You either made a bracha or you didn't make a bracha. But there are infinite depths to which one can reach, and as one goes along in life, hopefully the progression of one's life is deeper and richer and more fulfilling at that level. So certainly there's a base level. Listen, not everybody who gets married is going to reach the highest level of Avas Hashem either. We're talking about ideals and what are the mechanisms that can help a person along. Marriage is undoubtedly a very, very vital mechanism that helps a person along. But there are other mechanisms as well. The chesed you do to others, the care about others, you know, all of these things are mechanisms. All of us need all the help we can get to try to reach depths. But the answer is there are infinite depths in this, and as we come along. Right? So that's the idea of the month of Adar. Now, one other comment I want to make about Rosh Chodesh. Is this. We know that the Jewish people are compared to the moon. When Hashem said to Moshe, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, this moon is for you to proclaim, but the Medrash says, Yisrael Nimshelu Lelavana. The Jewish people are compared to the moon. Lachem literally means, we're like the moon. We are moon people. Rav Nachman used to use the expression, he was a moon person. We are people of the moon, we are not people of the sun. Of course, the Jewish calendar is a bit complicated because the Islamic calendar is totally a lunar calendar. Now you understand where the problem is. 12 lunar revolutions around the sun is only 354 days. The Earth going around the sun is 365 days and a fourth, whatever it is. So Be'erech, approximately, a pure lunar year is 11 days shorter than a solar year. Now that would mean if you have a pure lunar calendar, your holidays would gradually be moved earlier and earlier and earlier, and thus Ramadan, which was just finished, sometimes is in the summer, in other words, all four seasons. In other words, if in year number one, let's say, Ramadan is in April, then next year Ramadan will be in March, and next year it'll be earlier in March, and then it'll be in February, then it'll be in January, then it'll be in December, then it'll be in November, etc., etc. Which is why in the Islamic calendar, any holiday could be at any point in the seasons, which are based on the sun. Now, the Jewish calendar, as you know, does require that Pesach be in the spring. And in order to ensure in a lunar calendar that Pesach will always be in the spring, that is why seven times in a 19-year cycle, seven out of 19 years, we have an extra month after Adar, not this year, called Adar Sheni, which if Pesach is getting too early, Adar Sheni will push Pesach forward a month, therefore to ensure that Pesach will always be around the spring. So the Jewish calendar technically is not a pure lunar calendar. It is a combination of lunar and solar. But be it as may, other than Adar Sheni, which only happens in every few years, basically we operate on the moon. And what is the significance of the Jewish people being people of the moon rather than people of the sun? And why is Rosh Chodesh? You know, Rosh Chodesh is a semi-yom kippur. We'll see, women, as you know, have a special shalchus to Rosh Chodesh. We'll discuss that. But there are really three reasons that I want to share with you why Klal Yisrael has a shalchus to the Levana more than the Chanukah. Is number one, the Levana, the sun, let's take the sun, goes from being totally on to being totally off. The sun rises and it's there, it dominates, it shines, it lightens, and then the sun sets and the orb of the sun is gone. The moon, however, goes through gradual phases, the waxing and the waning. It grows from a little sliver to a 15th of the month, and then it goes into the waning phase, and then it goes into total darkness at the end of the month. And exactly at the point that there's total darkness, the light begins to come back again and again and again and builds up. And the Medrash says that is the Jewish people. The Jewish people do not have a continuous and consistent relationship, with God in terms of its outward manifestations. In spiritual life, both of the individual and of the collective, there are times of ascendancy and times of descent. There are times of Aliyah and times of Yerida. There are times when, as a nation, Klal Yisrael is powerful, as it was in Shlomo HaMelech's time, and there are times where we're in exile in Churban. In the life of an individual, there are times when an individual feels spiritually empowered and close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there are times when a person feels abandoned and lost. But the moon reminds us that even at those moments of abandonment and darkness, the light will continue to grow and ascend. And therefore, Yisrael is Nimshalo Levana, because we too go through waning and waxing, both as a nation, as an individual. And that really brings me to a second comparison to the Levana. And that is, although this is not scientifically accurate, but it does give you the picture, and that is, the sun only operates during the day. Of course, you would say that's an oxymoron, because the sun makes it the day, but the sun shines during the day. The moon has its ability to reflect light. It doesn't give light, to reflect light, even in the middle of the darkness. And that reminds a Jew that a Jew has the capacity to reflect the light of God not only when times are good and times are easy and times are comfortable, but even in the darkest nights, a Jew is able to act as a beacon of Kiddush Hashem, to send the light of God onwards. The ability to give light in darkness is not a koach of the sun, because the sun, when it's dark, the sun disappears. Now, I understand that scientifically you would express it the opposite way, but in terms of the visual picture, the sun has no koach over the choshech. The moon has a koach to be meir even the choshech. And that again tells the Jew that even in an Auschwitz, even in a concentration camp, even in the darkest moments of life, a Jew can still be a witness for God. A Jew can live his life with nobility and greatness and Kiddush Hashem. And sometimes it's precisely those difficulties in which the true greatness of a Jew's belief in Hashem can become manifest and revealed. And the third Nekuda of the moon, which is really the explanation for the second one, is the moon does not have light of its own. The moon merely reflects a greater source. And that is what a Jew is. A Jew is not reflecting his or her light. A Jew makes himself or herself a reflector for the light of the Shechina. And that's why we have the power to even vanquish the darkness. Because it's not us. It's opening our hearts to receive the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, in these three overlapping respects, the Jewish people are compared to the moon and not to the sun. We're like the moon in our waxing and our waning, and the fact that even from the total darkness will come that light. Gradually, by the way, Rami Mar makes the point that it's gradual. And that's why the redemption of Mashiach will also be gradual. It's important. The one makes the point, just like the light of the moon emerges from its darkness in a slow, gradual way, unlike the sun, sun comes up, so too the Geula Shel Yisrael will be slow and laborious and gradual. It seems, according to the simple pshat of that number, Chazal, that this really supports the argument of Rav Kook and the like, who saw in the establishment of the State of Israel and all of these slow steps and all of these wars and all of these struggles. But some people say, how could that be Mashiach? Mashiach is supposed to come like the, you know, snap of a fingers all of a sudden.
But it's donkey.
But it's donkey. That's right. That's right. But the answer is that when we're not Zocha, it comes in slow incremental steps till eventually the full revelation will come. That's the idea. That's the idea of the donkey. The donkey, you ever see a donkey, how slowly, you know, the donkey is persistent, but you know, how slowly it moves with infinite patience. It's very interesting to watch, you know, how patient the donkey is as it maneuvers through the rocks. And that's what Ruach Chaim says. That is the idea of Rochev al HaChamor. Slow, go through a bunch of obstacles. You know, on the right. So that is the idea of the moon waxing and waning, giving its light even in darkness, and not giving of its own, but simply acting as a reflector of the light of Hashem. That is what a Jew is. Waxes and wanes, enlightens even the darkness, but knows that the light comes from a higher source, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In this sense, we can understand perhaps a little bit why Rosh Chodesh, which is symbolic of all of the Jewish people, is particularly connected to women. You know that this is a medrash. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says that Rosh Chodesh was given to women in honor of their refusal to participate in the sin of the golden calf by not giving their jewelry. And because of this, Rosh Chodesh was given to them as a special yom tov. There are many women. Well, there are things one is not supposed to do on Rosh Chodesh, like certain types of sewing and embroidery. Some women do not do laundry on Rosh Chodesh, etc. There are different customs about that. But it is considered to be a special women's holiday. And chayra like this, one of these segulas, one of the special qualities that women have in Tanakh is their ability to see the light, even in tremendous darkness and hopelessness, and to bring comforts, and to see the hand of Hashem, even when other people Men in particular did not necessarily see the hand of Hashem. We see this in Mitzrayim, where the Gemara tells us with the marriage of righteous women, the Jewish people were redeemed. Chazal explained very specifically what was the righteousness of the women, that men would come back discouraged, men would come back hopeless, men would come back with no sense of life having any potential at all, and the women would comfort them and make them realize that Hashem will keep his promise eventually. So it was the sense of seeing the light in the darkness. The Cheder Eigel. Women didn't sin in the Cheder Eigel. How is that connected? Why did the Jewish people sin in the Cheder Eigel? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down, the Jewish people lost faith. They were afraid. They needed an intermediary. They didn't feel they could relate to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. When we say the women didn't sin, you understand. Oh, just spoke my pardon?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay. You spoke my pardon?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So the thing is that the women did not give in to the sense of fear and hopelessness. They had hope and emunah. Why didn't the women sin with the sin of the spies? Same idea. The men were so fearful that Eretz Yisrael would destroy them. And the women once again had hope. So if we were to identify all of these things, you know, the Skos Nashim Sitkaliyos Nigayim, and if we were to identify they didn't sin with the Eyo, and they didn't sin with the Meraglim, the common denominator between those three is a sense of hope and emuna, even when things look hopeless, even when things look like there was no way out. That is why there's a special kesher with Rosh Chodesh, because if Rosh Chodesh is the ability of the light to triumph over the darkness, the Mela, this was what women exemplified, and because of this they were given Rosh Chodesh. So once again, Rosh Chodesh is a special time, and the fact when you combine it with Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is Mishnichnas Adar Marbin the Simcha, that could increase one's Simcha. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, which will be connected, is you know that last Shabbos, there was one Shabbos behind, but last Shabbos we had a special maftir which talked about the mitzvah of giving the half shekel. And we know that the half shekel was an annual mitzvah when there was a Beis HaMikdash. But what people sometimes don't realize, unless they learn the Chumash well, is there are two and possibly three different mitzvahs of Machtzis HaShekel in the Torah. There are three different Machtzis HaShekel aspects in this mitzvah. Mitzvah number one is that every year people have to give a half shekel coin towards the purchase of the sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? In the Beis HaMikdash they brought sacrifices. Every day they brought the Korban Tomid, and Shabbos was a Korban Mizah. Now the Beis HaMikdash had to buy those animals, that cost money. So what funded the purchase of those animals was an annual donation of a half shekel from each person. Now it's very important to realize that the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins Nisan, not Tishrei. That means from Rosh Chodesh Nisan onwards, fiscal means the financial year. Fiscal, yeah, it's not a Jewish term, but the financial year of the Beis HaMikdash begins from Nisan. No, fiscal, like, you know, businesses operate, do you know what I mean? No, like, many businesses have what's called a fiscal year. In fact, the U.S. government operates, I think, from September to the end of June. So, be it as it may, it's important to recognize, remember the halacha, once it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, all new korbanos have to be purchased from newly collected money. So even if there's a surplus in the temple treasury from last year's shvelim, they cannot use that money for new korbanos. There's a whole discussion, what do they do with surplus? Or what do you do with it, etc. But the korbanos must be bought from newly collected shkalim, which is why we start collecting the shkalim Rosh Chodesh Adar, to give people 1 month to kind of send in their donations. Now, if they didn't give it by Nisan, they send it in later on in the year, but at least by Nisan there would be enough money to start buying korbanos from new money. So that's an annual donation called Machzis Hashem. And the reason we read Parsha Shkolim on Rosh Chodesh Adar, or the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, is a zecher, a commemoration of that annual mitzvah of Machzis Hashem. That's why we read it. And in fact, on Purim, the fourth Purim, we also give somebody Machzis Hashem as a zecher. Alright, so that's the most commonly understood Machzis Hashem. But there are two other ideas of Machzis Hashem. One is that there was when the Mishkan was constructed, there was a one-time donation of Machzis Hashekel of silver, and that one-time donation was melted down, and it formed the Adonim. The Adonim are the sockets of the boards of the Mishkan. Again, if you've ever seen a picture, the picture of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is a structure of boards. Right, boards, and each board has two protrusions, or two sticks, like a socket coming out, and the sticks were inserted in their base in a silver base. And that's called the adonim, and that held the boards up. Silver was very heavy. Each board had two protrusions, so there were two sockets for each board that held them in place, and when the Mishkan was dismantled, they would take off the sockets and pile up the boards. If you have in the Art Scroll Chumash, there's a picture of what that looks like. So that was a one-time donation of Machzis Hashekel that was not used for the Korbanos, but it was used for the construction of the Adonim of the Mishkan. Okay? So the first thing is the Korbanos every year. The second thing is a one-time construction of the Adonim. Now then there's a third idea in Machzis Hashekel, which is not really connected to Machzis Hashekel at all. That is, whenever the Jewish people are counted, it's more of a negative aspect, whenever there is a census, whenever they are counted, they are not supposed to be counted by body or head. They are supposed to be counted by indirect means. In the Midbar, those indirect means happened to have been with the Machzis Hashekel that they gave. Well, it wasn't the third Machzis Hashekel, but with the two Machzis Hashekel they gave. But you see from Tanakh that is not automatically a requirement. For example, when Shaul counted the Jewish people for an army, he made them give a sheep, and he counted the sheep. When David counted people, he made them give pebbles or the like. Okay, so the point is that this third aspect is not necessarily connected to Machzis Hashekel, but it does require that counting be indirect. That's why there's some discussion in the religious world. Are religious Jews allowed to respond to a census? Let's say the Israeli census, and this is a problem in Israel where many people do not answer census. They ask, how many children do you have? And you write down four, or whatever it is you're counting. Again, we paskin that it's mutter, actually, but by the time the government tabulates the totals, they are not counting people. They are counting pieces of paper, or they're counting, numerical figures. You wrote down four, eight, etc., right? So they're not doing a head count. The head count would be if somebody knocks at the door and says, please assemble your family, and I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But if I ask you how many people are in your family, and you tell me four, and I write down four, the chayra, that is not a head count. That would not run afoul. That's why you may have seen or heard that even when we count people for a minion, do we have a minion? So we don't say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, because that's a head count, but we recite a pasuk which has 10 words in it. Hoshia es amecha, uberech es nacharasecha, urei v'naseim adolam. That's an indirect counting. That avoid. So these are three different components. One is giving of the annual half shekel for korbanos. Two is the one-time half shekel that was given for adonim. And third is a general prohibition that Jewish people should not be counted directly; they should be counted indirectly. So what I want to do is just to sketch out, given the fact that we have these three different aspects of Machtos HaShekel, let's try to see what each of them might mean. We discussed some of this, but some of it will be new, and how it applies particularly to Adar and Purim. Yeah.
So what's the reasoning behind indirect?
Okay, the Torah says, the Torah gives the following reason, but then we'll elaborate. The Torah gives the reason, in order that there should not be a plague against the people. Now, we will have to understand that, but there is a concept that when you are counted individually, you are susceptible to a certain midas hadin. The world will see how that works. So let's first take the Adamim, because chronologically that was the earliest Machtos HaShekel. That was the Machtos HaShekel that was given for the construction of the Mishkan itself. So first of all, something very interesting here, and that is, this is the only part of the Mishkan in which the Torah insists everybody give the same amount. Meaning, when people donated gold and silver and copper and cloth and wool to the Mishkan, there was generally no requirement everybody gave the same amount. If you were richer, you gave more. If you were poorer, you gave less. You could decide whether you wanted to give gold or silver or copper or wool. There is no requirement of uniformity in contribution. But if you were... In other words, not many of these. In other words, the general donations to the Mishkan. In other words, the Mishkan. People donated materials to the Mishkan. Generally speaking, that was not tied to a half shekel at all. The only part of the Mishkan, I'm not talking about the Karbanis now, the only part of the Mishkan where God says everybody must give the same is that part of the Mishkan that is the sockets, the Adanim, that held up the wood. So our question is this. If, generally speaking, people could give whatever they wanted towards the general construction of the Mishkan, why for the Adanim is there an insistence of uniformity? Yes, sir? Right. Yeah, well, that's a beautiful terrace, that's a good terrace. Now I'm going to use that idea for the other Machtos HaShekel, but you could use it for this one too. I have a different explanation for this one, but again, we say Shiv and Panim or Torah, and there's 70 faces, and you know, that's certainly a very beautiful explanation. But the explanation I saw was from a Sefer Be'er Yosef, who was a great Baal Musar, where he says the following. Ultimately, every human being lives their life to build a Mishkan for Hashem. The way we live our lives is the Mishkan we make to Hashem. And as the song goes, Bilvavi Mishkan Efne. I build, what's the word Mishkan mean? A dwelling place for Hashem. I build a dwelling place for Hashem in my heart. That's why it says, V'yasu mi mikdash. Make for me a mikdash. God says, make for me a sanctuary. V'shachanti b'sochan. So I will dwell within them. Not in the building, but within the heart and the soul. Consequently, when God calls on every individual to build a Mishkan, God cannot say everybody gives the same. God cannot say you give the same as you and you. Each person is different. Each person is unique. Each person has different gifts. Some have the gifts of wool and some have the gifts of gold, without precisely defining what these are. But each one is different, and therefore God says each one gives according to their abilities. Each one gives according to their uniqueness. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not everybody does the same. So everything about the Mishkan is building the sanctuary of our lives to Hashem. But when it comes to the foundation, what does a foundation represent? So here the Gemara in Makos says that the Torah has 613 commandments, but the Gemara in Makos shows how different Nevi'im reduce the principles, so you can kind of encapsulate it. You know, one Navi made it 15 principles, one Navi made it 11, one Navi made it 9, and it keeps on going lower and lower and lower, till it finally reaches Habakkuk. Habakkuk is one of the prophets in the Troesah. And Habakkuk says, you know, I'll take the whole Torah and make it one principle. It's not the principle of Hillel and the Najee. It's a different principle. It's a pasuk that says, Tzadik v'emunaso yichya. A tzadik lives by faith. A tzaddik lives with emuna. Emuna that Hashem is the Borei Olam. Emuna that He created the world for a purpose. And that is the foundation of the Torah. So the Ber Yosef writes that if the construction of the Mishkan generally reflects the unique and individual gifts that we contribute, the sakins, which is the foundation, represents the gift of faith. Because Emuna is the foundation by which all of the edifice is supported. Therefore, Emuna requires uniformity in the sense that God says each of us serves Him differently. Each of us gives Him different gifts and different talents and different abilities. But the common foundation to all of our service must be Emuna. That is why the Adoni, which is the Sheresh, the roots of Emuna, says everybody gives the same. Because everybody's Avaida must have that foundation of Emuna in order to be valuable. He then goes on and offers some other explanations. Why, though, is the contribution?
I understand. Yeah. The fact that it's uniform amount represents Emuna, or the half shekel
itself represents Emuna? No, uniform, not half. I'll get to why half. Uniform, everybody gives the same. Everybody gives the same. We didn't say why half, I'll come to that. But everybody giving the same means, although each of us serves Hashem in our own individual way, in order for that avoda to be worthwhile, it must rest on the common foundation of Emuna. And commonality is why there's uniformity. I'll get to what I have. Now, let's take the other question. So that kind of explains why everybody gives the same. But why does everybody give half? Half. So here he says a beautiful idea. That in order to have a Muna, a human being has to know they only know half of the story. Why does a human being lack Emuna in Hashem sometimes? Because we see things in the world that don't make sense to us. We see tzaddikim who suffer. We see rishonim who prosper. We see a midas sadin that seems to be out of proportion to the way Hashem should behave. And of course, this is what the book of Eob is about. When you have a righteous person who suffers. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, why did tzaddikim suffer? And yet ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not giving you the final answer. But what is Emuna? Emuna says, I believe, even what I don't understand, and even what doesn't make sense to me, I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knowing I only see half of, maybe less than half, but I only see a part of the picture. I don't see the whole picture. In fact, Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage. And a mashal that is often given in this is, imagine a play that has been going on from the beginning of history to the end of history. And we have a walk-on part of five lines in this massive play of 10 trillion pages. And our five lines say, you are to trip on a banana peel and break your leg. And it makes no sense to me. I go to the director and I say, what is this? It makes no sense. And the director will look at me somewhat impatiently and say, well, if you read the 5 trillion pages that came before and the 6 trillion pages that come after, you will see exactly where it fits and why it's necessary. But nobody has that vantage point. And therefore, Emuna is not only the common foundation, but it's machtsis to know I only know half of the picture. That's my Emuna. Then he mentions a third point about the Adonis Hashem. The Adonim are melted down into silver, and each board gets 2 sockets. Why does each board get 2 sockets? You could have just as well made 1 big socket holding the board. So here he makes another point, and that is, Emuna embodies 2 ideas. One, is faith in Hashem. And the other is faith in my worthiness to have a relationship with Hashem. That's faith in oneself. Because a person might feel so far from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They might feel so undeserving. They might feel rejected by God. That they'll never have the inner awakening to be able to turn to Hashem and seek Him out. By the Chedo Ego, Ramban says, the real sin of the Chedo Ego was a sin in the Jewish people feeling that without Moshe, they were incapable of a relationship with Hashem. So there's faith in God and faith in yourself, which is also an important madrega that a person has to have. So the Adonim, therefore, number one, illustrate Emunah. The reason why it's uniform meaning everybody gives half shekel, is to show that although each of us builds our Mishkan in a different way and with different materials, and Hashem wants that individuality, it must be predicated on the common foundation of faith. That's why it's uniform. The reason why it's half a shekel and not a whole shekel is because we have to recognize in Emunah that we only see machzis, we only see half. And the reason why it's two Adam instead of one Adam is to remind us that Emunah is double-pronged. Faith in Hashem and faith in ourselves and our ability to have a relationship with Hashem. That's the Machtes HaShekel that's often not talked about. That's the forgotten Machtes HaShekel of the Adonim, which is not the annual Machtes HaShekel, but the Adonim is the lesson of Emunah. And of course, it's Shaychus, its connection to the month of Adar in Purim is very, very obvious, because Purim is a time of concealment of the divine. Purim is a time when Hashem's name is not even mentioned, when the so-called miracle could have been understood as a bunch of coincidences. There's nothing supernatural going on in the world. And things that seem like a tragedy, Esther being taken as queen, which was a tragedy, Haman's Gezeirah, we see in retrospect how God turned it all around and brought redemption, and we only saw part of the story. Until we see the whole story, nothing is going to make sense. Okay, that is the lesson of Adonim number one. What time do you have? Okay, now let me just briefly, the good at least, Adonim number two. Which is the more common Machzis HaShekel that people know, because that was an annual mitzvah. That is the annual mitzvah of giving the Machzis HaShekel to the Korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash. Now here, I'm going to say exactly the point that was made about the Adonim, and that is, once again, the two features of the Machzis HaShekel are uniformity. Everybody gives the same. And number two, half and not whole. So here, the underlying suggestion is this. If the Machzis HaShekel of the Adonim is a lesson in faith in God, the Machzis HaShekel of the Korbanos is a lesson in unity and love of your fellow Jew. And that is, the notion of uniformity says, when it comes to serving Hashem and giving Korbanos to Hashem, we all stand before Hashem as equal. When it says the rich person gives no more and the poor person gives no less, that is also a reference to spiritual attainments. Meaning, God does not judge us in a way by what we accomplish. God judges us by how much of ourselves have we given to Him. The person who gives 100% of what they're able to give, even if, whether it's money or learning or whatever mitzvah it is, even if it's much less objectively than another person. Now let's take Talmud Torah as an example. One person is such a brilliant person that they could learn, 300 pages of Gemara a day. But they only do 100. They do 100 pages of Gemara a day, which is a phenomenal amount. But it's that. Another person has to, doesn't have that ability, and it takes him a week to do one page. But he plugs away and works and struggles and learns one page a week. So, from my perspective, the guy who learns 100 pages a day, that's 700 pages a week. And someone who does one page a week, we would say, well, the guy who did 700 pages a week is 700 times better. Hashem's perspective is exactly the opposite. That person only gave HaKadosh Baruch Hu one third of what they could have had. And the other person gave to Hashem everything. And Hashem evaluates us by how much finds $100, you may not tell the master, but according to halacha, if a non-Jewish slave says finds $100, the $100 belongs to the master. Radak writes, Moshe is called Eved Hashem because everything that Moshe was, everything that Moshe had, he used to serve Hashem. He's Eved Hashem. Moshe Kamar Eved. What the Eved acquires, Kana Rabba, belongs to the man. That's the book, all for the boss. Exactly, it's all for the boss. Asher Kana Eved, Kana Rabba. This is the Radak in the book of Yeshua. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman says, that's what the Rambam means when he says, every person could be like Moshe. Certainly, we can never be like Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have his talents, his ability, his sitkos, his wisdom, his mind, whatever it is. But, just as whatever Moshe Rabbeinu was, he gave to Hashem, we could reach that much greater too. Whatever we are, which is much humbler, we can give it to Hashem also. And then, on that level of how much of ourselves that we give, that level indeed need to be excited by life and life living. You know, it's interesting that when the Chafetz Chaim dies, so someone approached his son and asked his son, you know, there's a saying in Chazal, Tzadik Gezer, a Tzadik decrees, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the God listens. A Tzadik decrees something, someone should get better, Hashem listens. So this is the Kalach of the Tzadik. So the Chafetz Chaim, some of the Chafetz Chaim son, can you give me some examples of how your father did this? How the tzaddik is gazer, by Chafetz Baruch Hu Mikhail, and see some miracle stories. So the Chafetz Chaim son answers, I'm sure there are some stories, if you there are. But he said, my father was never interested in the tzaddik decree and God fulfilling. My father was interested in the Chafetz Baruch Hu gozer, God decree and tzaddik fulfilling, meaning, the other way around. Instead of Chafetz Chaim was not interested in what decrees can he make against God that God would listen to. He was interested in what were God's decrees that he listened to. And the idea of giving yourself over to our Chafetz Chaim. So that's the uniformity. Now, Asher Lo Yad, we stand with equality before God. As long as, that's important, as long as each of us does what we can. Now, the half shekel here has a different meaning than the half shekel of the Adonim. The half shekel of the Adonim, we said, is the idea of a moon that we only know half the story. Here, the half shekel is the idea of Achdus and love of Israel by reminding me that a half cannot attain perfection or completion except if it's combined with another. Therefore, that is the lesson to me that I am deficient unless I link myself to others with community. So, these two ideas here, one is equality before God, and the other is the need to connect to others. You can see how it brings a person to love of Israel, Abbas Israel, because number one, if I recognize that I stand before God equally, then number one, I don't put you down because you stand equally with me, and number two, I don't get jealous or despondent because I recognize the importance of my chayot. I mean, it's well known that a lot of the impulse in the human being to put people down by lashon hara or whatever it is, ultimately comes because of a sense of inadequacy within the person themselves. That if I feel rotten, if I feel low, if I feel debased, so the only way I can get some type of equilibrium in my life is to pull somebody else down and say, well, I might be bad, you know, they're a lot worse. But if one is secure in the significance of their service of Hashem, then there's much less of a need to be about their other people. So the notion of each of us standing before Hashem as equals can eliminate jealousy, animosity, depression, despair. And of course the idea that my avodas Hashem is incomplete unless I connect to others, that itself calls on avas Yisrael. And therefore, what we're suggesting is that there are two different mitzvahs of Machas Hashem. The Adanim is the lesson of faith, and the Korbanos is the lesson of Avas Yisrael, love of Israel. Now just coming to the third prong of Machas Hashem. Whenever you count the Jews individually, you have to use a coin or a rock or a sheep or whatever it is, or a pasuk. That really ties into this prong. And that is, when you count the population by Machdus HaShekel, that's a very anonymous way of counting. In other words, essentially, I just count the Machdus HaShekel, I know how many people there are. As opposed to my being singled out. Again, the concept is that when I am singled out, when I am separated out from the greater number of people, I am standing before God as an individual. As an individual, I stand before Hashem with all of my faults and all of my weaknesses. But when I'm counted as part of a mass of money, or coins, or rocks, or sheep, I am part of a crowd. And as part of the crowd, as we talked about a number of times, like Kriyas Yamsuf, etc., my merits, even if my merits as an individual are insufficient, I can survive and flourish in the merits of the crowd. Right, so the Machshas HaShekel is the notion, be counted as part of the group, and don't try to separate yourself from the group. Okay, so those are kind of the lessons, and it's very much related to Purim, because when Haman accuses the Jews to Achashverosh, Haman uses the phrase, there is a nation that is mefozar u'mefolad. They are scattered and separated among the nations. And the Medrash says, that means they are scattered and separated amongst themselves. Sinas chinam. Hatred, polarization. And that is why when Esther decides to try to help her people, the first words she says to Mordechai when she decrees fast, Leich kenos es kol hayehudim. Go and bring all the Jews together. Haman's argument is there are mefozar and mefolad b'na amin. The tikkun for mefozar and mefolad is leich kenos es kol hayehudim. And that is why, when we were finally victorious over Haman, the mitzvahs that Mordechai enacted for the celebration of Purim involved unity and togetherness in Klal Yisrael, sending gifts of food to friends and giving money to charity. All of that is building a bridge. So the idea of the Machdus HaShekel as a faster of Achdus and unity is a tikkun to what Haman wanted to do against the Jewish people, and it corresponds to what Mordechai and Esther did to overcome the threat of Haman. And Haman, of course, is the prototype of Amalek in every generation. And therefore, we need to incorporate that in our own lives. Okay, so we have these three components of the Machdus HaShekel. Okay, good, good, good.